On today's edition of Hoops 360, we break down the latest in the WNBA-CBA saga. Plus, we also have UCLA head coach Corey Close joining us to get insight into the Bruins' mindset as they head into tournament time. Finally, Tennessee's rough loss. And how underrated is Michigan right now? What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Hoops 360. On today's show, we have an update, I guess, on the WNBA CBA. Plus, UCLA head coach Corey Close finds some time in her very busy schedule to chat with us about her team and all things Bruins. And last but certainly not least, is it panic time in Tennessee? All of that coming up on today's edition of the show. But before we get into that, just want to remind you that if you disagree with something that we say, if you have a thought on one of our takes, if you want to push back on us, let us know. Leave a comment below if you're watching on YouTube, but you can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. She's Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Cass, it's so nice to be back with you.
Welcome back.
Absolutely crushed it last week, but good to be home.
Thanks. It is good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back. Last week was at the Super Bowl for Yahoo Sports Daily. Had a great time. Check out our stuff on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. On Wednesday, though, I woke up and I was running through my list of my schedule. I was like, okay, I have our show, I have radio, got to do these interviews, have all of these things. And I was like, what am I missing? What am I missing? You know that feeling when you just feel like you're forgetting something? It took me into the afternoon to be like, Hoops 360. Yep. It was just in the back of my Wednesday brain. So
it should be. Should be in the back of everyone's Wednesday brains.
It should be. I agree. All right, Cass, let's get into it. Before we get into all things college hoops, before we catch up with Corey Close, we have an update on the WNBA CBA situation. So this past Friday, the WNBA delivered a new proposal to the union, the first one in about a month or so. So from what you have heard and what you know, what's new here?
Well, coming out of that in-person meeting, there seemed to be an understanding, especially from the players' union side, that it was the WNBA's turn to respond. The last proposal had been submitted by the union. Of course, the league had said, a source close to the league had said that they didn't respond because it was too similar. I was told that in that meeting, two priorities by the players were kind of made clear. There are others, but two of them were that there should be housing standards for certain players, so housing provided to them, and facility standards for all of the teams. This has been kind of an arms race in the past few years. So according to a source, what the league did was respond in kind. They put these into their proposal that they submitted to the union. The details are that in terms of housing, which have been standard since the first CBA in 1999, teams have to provide housing for players on a first-year deal, players on minimum contracts, and for those two developmental players per team that it is introducing in its CBA proposal. The salary cap was also up to $5.65 million in year one. Their previous proposal was around $5.5 million. And the last year, so 2025 salary cap, was $1.5 million. And then there are just certain verbiages around practice facilities, what they should give to players, provide to players, have for players, rather than what we've seen in the past, where a lot of teams are going with the most elite and other teams are kind of just practicing at the local gym.
So, you know, it sounds like the league is saying, okay, there are certain things that you want, like you mentioned, housing and standards for practice facilities, all things that are understandable and things that the league are saying, yeah, okay, like we are willing to bend the knee to make sure that you're getting what you need, make sure that we get what we need, and as the league as a whole. But it's fascinating to watch all of this unfold, Cass, because I felt like at the very beginning, let's go back to, you know, right after the links were bounced from the postseason, when Nafisa Collier had her media availability, she had a lot of very bold and choice things to say about Kathy Engelbert. In that moment, I felt like the women's basketball society as a whole was so pro-player, was, you know, pay them what you owe them, and, you know, they need better, they deserve better, they demand better, they should demand better. It was very pro-player. And I feel like there has been this shift in the court of public opinion and in public perception that feels a little bit more pro-league. Now, I don't think that it should be, okay, you're either pro-league or you're pro-player and there's no in-between. Of course, it's not always black and white. There has to be a little bit of gray. But it does kind of feel like there's been a little bit of a shift. So where things are right now, you know, league versus players, how are both sides handling this?
Well, in terms of public perception, there's still a lot of pay the player sentiment. I saw that at Unrivaled. Mm-hmm. But it does seem, to your point, like there's an ebb and a flow to this all the time. Where in February, a season should be around the corner. There's certainly some irritation on the side of fans. And everything is public perception, right? Everything is a public relations draw. And I think if you're looking at what has happened over the past 2 weeks, there's certainly a case to be made that the WNBA looks really good right now. You know, we were talking earlier this week and I compared it to if you're shopping on Poshmark, you know, eBay, wherever you're getting like your thrift stuff, you see something for $50 and you're like, I'm not going to pay $50 for that, but I will pay $45. So what do? You bid 40 so that they come back and say, well, I'm not getting rid of it for 40. I'll sell it to you for 45 or 42 or whatever. And you have a negotiation and you meet in the middle. I do wonder in terms of the number, and we don't know exactly, you know, what each number was at each proposal, but it does seem like the union has maybe stuck their feet in and said, this is what we want. And there doesn't seem to be room to budge on the revenue sharing specifically. And that's really what the players union has focused on. But to bring it all the way back, the WNBA from their side has seemed to answer a lot of the other questions and give the players a lot of what they're asking for. And that has leaked. So there are certainly fans looking at this right now saying, well, you have A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Sign the deal, because time is ticking and people on every side of this, right? The union, the league, fans, us, what have you, are getting irritable about it, I would assume.
Yeah. And like, Cass, you and I have both been very consistent throughout the entirety of this process that we want everyone to feel like they're getting something out of it. We want everyone to feel like, okay, we got what we feel like we are worth from the player's perspective, but it's also not WNBA.gov. Like, this is a league that's trying to make money. This is a league that's experienced a lot of growth, wants to continue to experience growth, and it's not a nonprofit organization. So both sides have to take care of themselves. I do feel like there has been maybe this shift in the court of public opinion because of what you just said, that there's this sense of anxiety maybe from some W fans of, like, a couple of months ago, we felt really good about a deal getting done. And now at this point, we're sitting at February 10th. And while I don't think that we're going to be living in a world, or at least I hope we're not going to be living in a world where we, you know, don't play the season at all or miss games, you're starting to feel that heat a little bit. Fans are starting to feel that level of anxiety a bit, I'm sure.
Feels like we're speeding towards a potential work stoppage that might look like a strike. I mean, it's February 10th. Like, there is still time to kind of cram stuff in, but there has to be a sense of urgency and what have you, like, to get this done and get this moving. Because as you and I have talked about, as we talked about with Maggie, like, the time has run out to kind of be casual about this at this point. And in terms of anxiety about not having a season or irritation or whatever language you want to use, like, Azaree Stevens had said this to us in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, that, like, she found it ridiculous. You know, it's almost time to report. Like, Unrivaled is going to wrap up soon. Athletes Unlimited. Like, what happens then? You're going to have to report to training camp in April. And I know it seems far away, but, like, we're going to get into the college season. And it's crazy that March is, you know, March Madness is going to start in about a month.
It gets late fast.
Yeah.
And as myself and probably all other fellow procrastinators know, it's so easy to say, like, I have plenty of time. I have plenty of time, plenty of time to get this done. And then all of a sudden it's midnight the night before it's due. And you're like, oh, crap, I have so much work to do. And you start to feel, like, you know, that sense of anxiousness. You start to feel rushed. And so we've been talking about this since September, October. We've been talking about this since Halloween, the day that the initial deadline was up. We kept saying, oh, there's time, because there was. But now we're getting into a time where there's just not a lot of wiggle room. Once you get into March, and especially in April, that calendar's jam-packed. There's not a lot of wiggle room there. Any level of confidence in your own personal confidence of this deal getting done?
I mean, the pessimist in me is always going to say, like, it's not looking good. I do kind of hope that each side realizes, like, and I don't say this because it's the WNBA. I know a lot of people feel that because it's women's sports, like, it's more dire. And maybe that's true. But anytime a league misses games, like, it is impacted. Like, fans note that. And hopefully the sides can come to a fair agreement and avoid that.
We saw it in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. We saw it in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Strikes and work stoppages are nothing new in sports, but it's damaging. It's mm-hmm. incredibly damaging, especially for a league like the W that's in its infancy. So I'm in the mode personally of prepare for the worst, hope for the best, because that's all we really can do at this point. So yet another WNBA CBA update. We'll see you next week. Hopefully, maybe. Who knows? Yeah, who knows? All right, coming up next, we are joined by UCLA head coach Corey Close. She'll give us a deep dive into what the season has looked like, her team's expectations. Corey Close will join us coming up next. Today's guest is the architect of the number two team in the country, a team that was in the Final Four last season, and I know has goals to get right back in there. The head coach of the UCLA Bruins, Corey Close, now joins Hoops 360. Corey, I really appreciate your time and all of your insight coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Your team now 23-1 at the time that recording this show, undefeated in the Big Ten. I know that every game and every week, every month of the season ebbs and flows. You learn new lessons about your team. So where things stand right now, what would you say is the identity of your team?
The identity of our team, I think, is actually just staying in the present. We are, in a situation where we don't want to look too far ahead and we don't want to get caught up with anything that's happened in the past. And I think there's so much danger with the expectations or worrying about outcomes. And so I know it sounds like coach speak, but I really think it's the key to our year that we are just going to stay really focused in growing and giving to each other day by day and trying to stack those days together.
Understanding that you want to stay present, like we can't talk about UCLA without that Final Four run. And I know I think you took a few days after the loss, but heading into this season as a coaching staff, like what have you taken from that experience that has helped you through this one?
Well, I think a couple things. One is, just what does it look like to handle distractions at that level? I mean, it's just a whole different ball game. And then you add the transfer portal was open at that time. There's just all kinds of things that were potential distractions. And I think that, I know how to lead through that better. I think that until I know how to lead through it, I can't expect the players to know how to operate really well through that. So that's one piece of it. And then just the margins, are so thin. And so what got exposed in us in the Final Four, and specifically for us, defensive rebounding was a big one. And then how many times we turned the ball over, and then some focus things on the scouting report. And I just think, there's a, Coach Tosh on our staff calls them nervous system moments. Like you can know it intellectually, you can even have it in your heart, but until you get to experience it with the adrenaline, the pressure, all of the things that come with that environment, you have to sort of understand what that looks like. And so I think we're more equipped to be able to not only tactically and some of the things that I mentioned, but also just in the nervous system moments, I think we're much more prepared this year.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah, they always say pressure is a privilege. And that's definitely what your team is experiencing this year. And I know that the expectation every year, the goal every year is to win a national championship. But does it feel like this year with Lauren Betts, Kiki Rice, Gabby Hawkes, so many members of your core in their final year of eligibility, does it feel like there's more pressure this year?
I think there can be. I think there's definitely more danger to internalize pressure. I think there's more potential to be distracted by other people's expectations. But, you know, I always say that if you have your eye too much on the goal, or that means you only have one eye on the process of what it actually takes to get to the goal. And I just think that's a real, Nick Saban used to say, outcomes are actually a distraction, and you have to surrender the outcome and actually fall in love with the process of what it takes to become great. But I have to talk to myself. You know, we have a phrase, you got to learn to talk to yourself rather than listen to yourself. Because if you just listen to yourself, you start to internalize all of the expectations, like it's championship or bust, or, you know, if they don't do it this year, that's it, or whatever else. And first of all, that is not my largest commitment to win a national championship. My largest commitment is to help and teach, mentor, and equip these young women for life beyond UCLA. And my true mission is to help them be the best versions of themselves. You know, I always tell them there's only two things that stay with you for the rest of your life from these 4 years. And that's who you become and who you impact. Banners hang in gyms and rings collect dust, but you get to keep who you become and who you impact forever. And so I really am just, and I'm trying to model that myself. Literally last night, I was having a little pep talk with myself. Just, you know, hey, Corey, remember your why. Remember why you're doing this. Remember what your true convictions are and what you've promised these families you would lead through. And so I do agree that this is the most talented team I've ever coached in my 33 years. There's incredible potential. I believe that we're not even close to playing our best basketball yet. We're just trying to fight for a little bit more growth every day. But it's obvious that we have an incredible amount of potential to hopefully have the opportunity to compete for a national title.
That aspect of talking to yourself versus like letting your thoughts run it is so interesting and definitely matches with everything we know about you as a coach. But when did that begin for you, and how do you implement it, and how do you implement it with players? Because I know, thinking of myself, like it can be so easy to spiral, and you really at the beginning have to be careful about telling yourself not to.
Yeah, you know, we work at it every single day. I, you know, just like we work on our defense every day, or if you're trying to get stronger, you go to the, you know, gym to, you know, lift weights or whatever. If you want to become stronger mentally, we go to the mind gym, we call it. And, Coach Tasha Brown actually leads it for us, but we've been really influenced by some incredible leaders, Joshua Medcalf, Trevor Moab, you know, Tim Kite, have really mentored me in this. But if you ever ask an individual, what percentage of the game do you think is mental versus physical? Everybody will say, oh my gosh, 70%, 80% mental. And then I'll ask, okay, the last time you went to the gym, how much of your workout did you spend intentionally working on the mental side of the game? And they're like, and I said, most people will say zero. But then I say, well, why not? It's because they don't know how. It's a skill. And so, you know, it starts with awareness. You know, you're talking about self-esteem. We always say you can't outperform your self-image, but it is truly, you know, it's not mind hope. It's not mind maybe. It's mindset for a reason. You have to set your mind there every day if you want to have a strong self-talk, a strong view of yourself. And so, you know, it's something that we literally start every day with, that we are either doing one of three activities. Well, we're either writing down seven things we're thankful for the last 24 hours. We're either doing seven I will statements or I am statements, or we're watching our visualization clips of things we want to, they're doing it right over and over again. And we do that 3 minutes to start every single day because we think it's a discipline. The other part that we try to do at the end of every practice is we say what went well that day, because nobody goes home and goes, man, I was on fire today. I was just playing out of my mind. I'm amazing. What do? You go, oh, I turned it over. Why was coach yelling at me? All of these things. And that only just actually makes it more likely that you're going to repeat those mistakes the next time. And so we end every practice and we encourage our players to write these things down before they go to bed, to write down things under their control that went well that day. I know that was a long answer to your short question, but it's just a really, we're really passionate about it. And our players that are in the pros, or more importantly, just professionals in life, they usually come back and tell us it's one of their most transferable skills they've gotten to life beyond sport even, but also even as professional athletes.
I was just thinking, I'm going to steal that for myself.
I steal it for myself every day. So
it's a great tool. And also physically writing it down makes a difference rather than typing it out on a laptop or a phone or just thinking about it mentally. Yep. And so much of this grind of the season, going throughout the postseason, is mental, but there's also a big physical side of it as well, obviously. You talked about in your postgame press conference after that win over Michigan, you talked about how you were intentionally subbing to save your body. So you as a coach, how do you balance that? How do you balance making sure that your players are conditioned for the grind of the tournament versus making sure nobody is overexerted or hurting themselves?
Well, I think I have incredible strength coach and, you know, a whole AP team that really does an amazing job. So we track everybody's load. You know, we have these things called force plates that they jump on, and you can measure how your body's responding to impact. And so it gives you triggers of like, hey, this person might be a little bit more at risk right now. They're maybe overcompensating one side or the other. You know, we don't treat everybody the same. Coach Wooden used to say the biggest form of partiality is to treat everybody the same. They're not the same age. They don't have the same wear and tear on their body. They may be battling different things. Lauren Betts, for instance, has these long levers. And so at 6'8", that you, not everybody has to deal with. And so sometimes her recovery is a little bit different. So we try to be very individualized, but also we have a team with 6 seniors. So I've had more off days this year than I probably have in the last 5 years, just because number one, they know how to prepare mentally better. But number two, physically, I just don't want to beat them up. I want the best ability is availability. And so I want to have our team really available at the highest levels. And so have been very intentional about recovery, rest, nutrition, all of those things. But I also really trust our team. And so they do their work to get their film study in. They're proactive about their extra workouts. They're watching their visualization films on their own. And so, you know, for that allows me to have some flexibility. For instance, on the road, we had one of the Big Ten schools that I will remain nameless will go, I cannot believe that you guys take 2 days off every week. No one does that, you know? And I was like, well, we have a group that knows how to prep, one day preps, and they know how to be mature in that way. So, you know, I just think every team's a little bit different and every individual is a little bit different. And so we just try to have to meet them where they are.
You mentioned Lauren Betts in that so much of what you do and have done for a couple of years now runs through her on both ends. How have you seen her game progress, or what does she really focus on this year, knowing that it's her last at UCLA and the pros are coming up?
You know, I think it's been really fun to watch with her is that I remember we had a really long conversation after last season, and she was really frustrated of how we performed in the Final Four, as was I. And, you know, talking about how we really needed her usage rate to go down. And I wanted her to focus on efficiency and getting her teammates more involved so that when teams took certain things away, that everything, we weren't all just staring at her to go make a play. And, you know, that's easy to talk about in the spring when you're disappointed and you can see it. But then when it happens the next year, it's like, oh, wait a minute, you know, like I've got all these players. And what I have been really proud of her about is that her usage rate is down, but her efficiency rate is way up. And she's affecting winning in more ways. So her assist rate is per touch is really high this year. The way she's switching and keeping guards more in front of her and playing defense away from the basket more, as well as being able to do, you know, great work as a rim protector. And so I think, you know, that sometimes can be scary. And you have your own individual goals at the same time as, of course, the main goal is the team. But I've just been really impressed with the selflessness she's chosen in that, and that she's really willing to do whatever it takes to help our team win. And I think empowering her teammates is part of what we needed from her this year, and for her to focus on just efficiency.
Yeah.
when you're game planning, how much comfort do you find in thinking to yourself, we've got 6'7" Lauren Betts and you don't?
Over and over and over again. I just, she covers a multitude of sins, we always say, you know. And honestly, sometimes I tell our other players, like, you guys are, you know, really lucky that Lauren's covering for us. Because, and I think sometimes I've really challenged our guards. Don't make Lauren do that. That's not fair, you know. Don't make Lauren have to rotate as much as we are. Take more pride in your individual defense. But it is remarkable how many ways she helps us get stops. And I just, she's a unicorn on the defensive end. I mean, she is so quick laterally. She's light on her feet. She's got long arms. She has a high basketball IQ, so she anticipates instead of reacts. She defends without fouling. I mean, you know, just think about all those things that just rolled off my tongue. I mean, she's a generational player, and I'll probably never, you know, coach a player exactly like her again.
It feels like the paint is always off limits when she's there.
Yeah, you can see people. They wild, start really. To go in and they see her and they're like, oh, never mind. And so, you know, I yeah, seriously, me too. But yeah, we're really lucky to have her, obviously.
On that note of her just kind of maybe covering some stuff up, you know, your lone loss is to Texas way back in November. Yeah. But at that presser, you said you had been harping on the team about some things that needed to change. And maybe that loss would be what prompted change out of it. Now that it's been a couple months, do you feel like that was the case?
I think yes, but I'd like to see even more. I still think this team needs to ramp up their level of aggression, just like, this is how we're going to play this game, and I'm going to assert my will. We are going to assert our style of play. This is just how it's going to go. And I do have a lot of respect for how Texas plays in that way. You know, they just play a certain way. And so you have to match that. But I think defensively, they really exposed us. You know, our team could get frustrated about not scoring, but that just exposed that their identity was on the offensive end and they needed to switch that around. We would not have had so much trouble on the offensive end if we didn't allow Texas 45 points in the first half. So I think it really established to us that, and I think it really struck home. We talked to our team, quit, you know, leading up to that, quit thinking you're just going to outscore everybody. We needed to be a team that knew how to get stops consistently. And, you know, Texas exposed in us that we weren't living that out. And so we had to really do that well. And then I think the other thing that I think we haven't made as much progress as I would like is just valuing the ball. We are a very high assist team. That's the good news. But the bad news is we've also had way too many turnovers. And so, you know, I think we're about the 13 turnover a game. We'd like to get that down to 11 or 10 per game by the time we're going into March.
You know, kind of piggybacking on that Texas game, I always hear from coaches or players who have played their respective sports for a long time that culture and identity is really easy when you're winning. It's yeah. difficult when you're losing or when you're winning through adversity. Just had a close win against a really defensively tough team in Michigan yeah. that kind of took you out of your style of play a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you learned after that close win?
Well, you know, part of it is we watched the last minute and a half. You know, we had an 11-point lead with a minute 29, I think, left to go. And then we had even a 9-point lead with 29 seconds. And, you know, just really made some errors. And JC, who used to be in the in the NBA, my assistant coach, he goes, I have never been a part of a program that works on special situations more. But when we got in, we didn't execute quite the way we needed to and made some mistakes on that front. And so I think that's one of the learning theses. Is just, you know, the pressure moments, you know, just really being focused on what we're trying to accomplish as a team. And, you know, I don't worry about like a missed free throw. Gabs is a 90% free throw shooter and she missed those free throws. That'll never happen again. I'm not worried about those things, but I do get worried about things that I know we've practiced that when the pressure was on, we didn't carry those over. And so that's my responsibility as a teacher to be better at that so that we get a different result. But I was so thankful to have a game like that. I thought it was perfect. And it didn't go our way. We had to have some adversity. We got to teach through just poise, response. We always say every opportunity is to strengthen your response. And I just thought it was such a great teachable moment for us. But also credit to Michigan. I mean, Michigan's a really good team. And so I will be shocked if we don't meet them again in the Big Ten tournament. So I think there's so many different learning things, but, you know, I think that is one of the things I respect so much about UConn, actually, is that they don't get tested at all. And then for so many months, and then they go in and play so well. Because I'm thinking to myself, we're winning these games by too many points. There's not enough pressure to be able to, our players learn to internalize that, process that, and play through that. But that's my responsibility, is to figure out ways to help, you know, manufacture that and help us, you know, continue to be ready for March.
To quickly touch on Michigan, because, you know, we've spoken a few times, Carolyn and I, this week about Michigan, the fact mm-hmm. that they've come so close to three top five programs now. In your estimation as a coach, having just faced them as well, like, what is it or what needs to happen for them to maybe get over that hump and take out a top team?
Well, I think it's two things for them. You know, what they do so well is they create extra possessions on hustle plays and rebounding. That's what they do really well. They also have play with great purpose. I think the challenge for them is that they need to have some other people to create spacing for the team. So we played off of a couple of players, which allowed us to help on Swords or Olsen, and really make every catch hard. And, you know, we're allowed to do that because some of their other players weren't able to pull us out of those spaces of help. And so, you know, I think for them to get contributions consistently from some of their other players, I think will, you know, make it harder for teams like us to cheat to those big time, you know, shot makers that they have in Olsen and Sword. So I would say that. But, you know, they defend really well. They play extremely hard. They play with great purpose. I mean, everyone in that whole arena knew who those shots were going to go to, including us. And they still found a way to get them off and to make them. And that's a tremendous compliment to them. But I think over the course of a long game, those kids are carrying a really heavy load.
Since you're still in Michigan, you have that Michigan swing. I'm curious, as a coaching staff, what you guys are doing on some of these long road trips where you're on the road for a week because of the Big Ten schedule.
You know, thankfully, our administration has really helped us create a great environment. We usually try to do something fun on one of the days, just nothing to do with basketball. Mm-hmm. We didn't do much here other than we watched the Super Bowl at a restaurant and, you know, some things like that. But every time we try to look at it a little bit different. We are in midterms this week. So we have a director of student athlete success. We bring tutors. We bring learning specialists. We bring, you know, trying to make sure that we're on top of things, because in a quarter school, we're in final exams during the NCAA tournament. So really being proactive on these fronts is an important deal. But they are long. I mean, there's no way around it. This is our last one. Thank you, thankfully, for the Big Ten schedule. But we travel really well. We charter, you know, with big planes where our players can sleep, and, you know, we're able to take care of business that way. I think we're given every resource we can to be, able to perform at a high level, even with the challenges of traveling to the East Coast. But the reality is, you know, everything from nutrition to hydration to how we sleep, time zones, you know, everything has had to be planned out and meticulously maximized, because there are great challenges associated with this Big Ten travel schedule.
Long road trips, plenty of opportunities to learn how to crochet or do some Sudoku puzzles.
I think there's some serious card games going on, TikToks being had.
Oh, yes. New season of Bridgerton is out. You know,
there you go. All of the above. So, you know, it should be pretty fun. We make the most of it. I think that you tend to value your chemistry at another level but you also have a chance. They tease me because I love to, you know, do team bonding and all the different things. But I said, all right, I'll make me a deal. One meal on every trip, I get to determine questions that everybody at the tables get to answer. Mm-hmm. And so we do a little bit of that too, and just try to build connections and be good teammates to each other.
Yeah.
You've been so generous with your time, but I do want to ask you before we get you out of here, as someone who has been such a proponent for growing the game, the coverage of the game, how we can be better and build the world of women's basketball, what's next? What do we need to be better at in order to make this game better?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking that and caring about that, by the way. I mean, I think things like this are really important, just to continue to do the work and the time to let other people know what's sort of behind the curtain of these programs. I think my number one thing would be storytelling. This team has, and of course I'm biased, but there are so many amazing stories that aren't being told. And believe me, Sienna and Lauren Betts are a great story. Kiki Rice is a great story. But if you knew the journey of Charlize Ledger Walker, or a first generation from Serbia, her family, and Angela Dugulich, and just the things that these kids and their journeys have gone through to get to where they are, and Gabs and you know, her brother and her family, and being just from Camarillo, and what that feels like. And, you know, 7 years old, she wrote down that she wanted to go to UCLA and gave it to her teacher, and now she's living it, and what that's been like. And, you know, there's just, the list goes on and on. But the reality for me is that most people don't know that. And I would ask, you know, I knew it was a few years ago. I don't know what the exact percentage is right now on linear sports. What percentage of linear sports are of women right now? A few years ago, it was only about 4% were still that way. I think it has gotten better. I don't know the exact number now, but I can almost guarantee you it's not proportionate to the growth we've seen. And so if we're out drawing viewership, you know, I don't know, that's not a word, but for the men's Final Four to the women's Final Four, 2 years in a row, you would think that we would have more coverage in some of the different outlets or the newspapers or news, different coverages on sports. And it's gotten better, but not proportionately at the level that I think it can, given the growth that we've seen across so many women's sports. So thank you to you guys for doing that right now.
On that kind of similar note, you know, you've always been very vocal on growing the game. You spoke about transfer portal throughout, and you mentioned it today again too. When you talk about building on the momentum of this game in terms of that kind of like more issue, what are you focused on there? Yeah. What do you want to see happen as the game goes forward?
Well, it's hard because part of the way I love the growth of the game, and that's been amazing, but some of this new landscape I'm not a real fan of, because I think NIL is long overdue. I'm a big proponent of that, but I'm a big proponent of it in the spirit of when it was supposed to come about. We just have no boundaries at all. There's no salary cap. There's no competitive equity. And what's happening is the people that are losing, I'm worried, will slow down the growth of the game, because it's shutting out high school athletes. It's really taking away their percentages of opportunities. And I don't like it. And you see less four-year development situations. And that being said, I have a responsibility to keep our program at a championship level. And I don't think I can do it with just freshmen anymore. So I'm recruiting a much lower percentage of freshmen. And then I'm committed to doing a certain percentage of the transfer portal. So for instance, this year, I know I'm losing 6 seniors, and I'm not replacing them with 6 freshmen. You know, I'm really meticulous about going, okay, we're probably going to sign 3 to 4 freshmen, and then we're going to sign probably 4 to 5 transfers, you know, and we have no interest in rebuilding. We really are intent on reloading. And so my responsibility is to adjust in the landscape that I'm given. And so, and to lead well, no matter what. But the reality is, I have to do that whether I like it or not. But I do think we need to be really careful that we don't crush our game by being too greedy, by not having good boundaries and infrastructure. I'm really pulling for the WNBA right now to come up with a CBA that's going to, help us continue to build the momentum of that league. I just think, when money comes in and greed comes in, you have a danger of losing what's really special about the growth of the sport. And I'm hopeful, but I'm also, I'm really I'm warning people, like, we have to make hard, right choices in order to protect the true integrity of our game and as well as the growth of our game. And if we get greedy and we get too selfish, we're going to lose that before we know it.
I've said it before. I'll say it again till I'm blue in the face. The life of a college coach has never been more difficult than it is right now, but you make it look easy. UCLA head coach Corey Close, thank you so much for your time, all of your insight, and really appreciate you for stopping by the show.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Right, there you go. That was UCLA head coach Corey Close. Really appreciate her for stopping by the pod, giving us all of her time, all of her great insight, a nice little peek into everything that is the UCLA women's basketball program. Cass, I think one thing that really stood out to me is when we were talking about the UCLA-Michigan game, she brought up the fact that they're blowing everybody out. I mean, they have a margin of victory of 29 points, 25 points in the Big Ten. She brought up how much she appreciated and was glad that they had a close game, was glad that they had to win a game in a different way. That was their lowest point total of the season. So interesting and fascinating to kind of look into the psychology of a coach, of keeping your team motivated whenever you're crushing everybody on your schedule.
Yeah, you never want to find yourself in that situation, although I guess maybe she did, but you have to learn how to win in different ways. And when the pressure is on is when is everything feels the most chaotic. And so for UCLA to get out of that one, you know, she mentioned they have that 11-point lead going into the final, you know, minute or so. That's pretty significant. And then to watch Michigan almost erase it, those are the moments you're going to look back on if you do want to, and they do win a championship. Like, those are the moments a championship makes. I know we talked today about South Carolina, looking back at losses that they've had that propelled them. You know, I don't know that UConn has always had this, and she called that out too, that all the respect in the world to UConn for playing in the Big East and not really being challenged and still just running rampant through the tournament. I think you and I had also just kind of talked about, it's getting time for top 16 reveals and Selection Sunday. And there's a lot of people looking at UCLA versus UConn and who might actually have the number one overall seed. Because if you look at UCLA's record and their quad one wins, it is significant.
13 quad one wins to UConn 6.
That's a lot.
So, hey, like, we also talked earlier in the show about coaches know when they're utilizing a microphone. And Corey Close is just, she's doing her job of saying, hey, like, look, when you play a really difficult schedule, you should be rewarded for that. What was maybe another one of your takeaways from our conversation with Corey Close?
You know, we asked her about Michigan. We've talked about Michigan, how they've come so close to taking out the top teams, but just haven't. And I thought that was interesting from a coach's perspective, but also really notably that she said she wouldn't be surprised if they did see them again in the Big Ten tournament. I, for one, am very excited for that potential. You know, this week I wrote about rematches are actually kind of fun. We don't necessarily see them a ton anymore because of these bloated conferences, but that's one I want to see. Michigan has never won the Big Ten tournament title. Never. I mean, that would be huge for them. And I think also the thing about rematches is that you've learned what worked or didn't work in the first game. You've worked where you need to be crisper, where you need to be cleaner. And that'll come up in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, if that's the championship game or the semifinal game, make sure your TV is on it. Like, the other ones can have the background TV. That's the main.
I mean, UCLA has won the Big Ten before Michigan has. And UCLA has been in the Big Ten for a whopping 2 years.
Caroline.
Ooh, woof. But yeah, we talked to Corey Close about the age of this team, how you're squarely in a window right now. Lauren Betts, Gabby Hawkes, Kiki Rice. You have so many pieces of this, Gianna Neekins, so many pieces of this team. They're out of eligibility after this year. So, you know, you have this pressure, this expectation to capitalize on the star power that you have on the right now. Whereas Michigan, you don't have that same kind of pressure. Silas Swords, you know, they have so many young pieces, young sophomores on this team where, yes, you have time to grow and time to learn, but Michigan doesn't have that same level of experience maybe that a UCLA has. But once we get into tournament time, once we get into conference championship time, like those are late sophomores. You've got two full seasons essentially behind you. So how different can Michigan look at the end of the season? Because I always think if you're consistently knocking on the door, at some point you are going to break through. Michigan's knocking on the door of some of those big time top five, top 10 wins. At some point, it's going to break through.
And that also applies to UCLA, right? Not to interrupt you, but to quickly jump on your thought there. Like, we talked to Corey about the fact that you just made your very first Final Four berth. And you and I think, as well as Ice, talked about how it's just historically difficult to enter the Final Four and win it all your very first year. It just doesn't happen. And she kind of talked about all of that outside noise to do it. So they now have the experience to maybe go win their first championship.
Knocking on the door. They were doing it last year. And she talked about, too, how frustrated Lauren Betts was after their Final Four loss last year's, but 30-plus point loss to UConn. I can imagine, as a competitor and as a coach, that's frustrating. And you have to sit with that for the next year. Like, that's the part that hurts the most, not just losing, not just falling short of a championship, but going home and knowing that you're going to be just marinating in that for the next couple of months. It just eats at you. And that can either be a negative thing that it can that you can be overcome by the pressure, or it can be kind of a motivating force moving forward of like, I experienced that last year. That sucked. I am not doing that again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have gained a whole bunch of chips that are going to only help them in the end. Will it necessarily win them a championship? No, but that's all you can do right now. And I think that if we were to ask Corey Close that, or if she listens to this and wants to get back to us, she will have a motivational saying or a great coaching reference to make about that, that she tells her players all the time.
I could just cover my entire office in Corey Close motivational quotes, and I would feel better about it every single day. I could look at the wall and just think, you know what? I can attack the day today. No, but I really appreciate Corey Close for stopping by and giving us an inside look into this program that looks like it is prepped and ready to make a run for a national championship. All right, guys, some more action that we had over the weekend. I know we just talked about how closely contested that UCLA-Michigan game was. One game that was not a closely contested game, that was Tennessee-South Carolina. The Gamecocks absolutely destroy Tennessee 93-50. That is the largest margin of defeat in Lady Vols history. Record-breaking in the worst possible way. There's so much to break down from this game. Of course, there's, you know, a basketball X's and O's side of things that we will 1,000% get into. But there's another side of this from Kim Caldwell's post-game press conference that I think could be maybe revealing of something larger that's happening in the Lady Vols locker room. So this was Lady Vols head coach Kim Caldwell in her post-game press conference after that brutal loss at the hands of the Gamecocks.
A lot of quit in us tonight, and that's been something that's been consistent with our team is we're not comfortable and things don't go our way, and I have a team that'll just quit on you, and you can't do that in big games. You can't do that anytime in the SEC, but you certainly can't do that at a program like this. I do know we don't have the leadership we need player-wise, and we've talked about for a couple weeks it can come from anyone, anywhere, but we need somebody that is respected and does things the right way to step up and lead this team from a player standpoint. I've had individual meetings. We've met with them. I've said it publicly that we need leadership. We need people that want to win. I think consistency is a big problem with this team right now. So it's hard to lead as a player when you're not consistent as a player. When you don't do what you're supposed to be doing every single day, then you don't have the respect of your teammates. We do have a few. We have a few young ones that I think that could step up and lead because they do things the right way.
All right, Cass. Kim Caldwell did not hold back in the slightest there. You heard her. She said, I don't think that we have the light leadership. She started her post-game press conference in saying we had a lot of quit in us tonight. Bold statements from the head coach. Initial reactions.
Well, part is context. I mean, the first thing I thought when I saw this just in print was Kim Caldwell, for the past year plus since she took over at Tennessee and probably before that, has always been very direct, to the point, somewhat short whether it's really good or really bad. So I think that is part of it, her style. But this is actually not the first time that she has called this team out. I believe it was the Mississippi State loss where she said that she kind of had a feeling they weren't going to have a good game. It was clear. She made a reference about players being late to shoot around. There seemed to be some serious issues with this team in terms of how they are approaching games, how they are playing within games. I think it sounded to me like a coach who was truly at the end of her rope. I don't know if this was kind of a purposeful play to put this out in the media, because she does say, you know, I have spoken with players individually. We've spoken with players individually. I've said it in the media, like, seems like she's like, let's try and motivate them however we can. And Dawn Staley talked a little bit about that, about how sometimes you have to trick players. So I don't know if it was that or just truly like you got blown out of the water against South Carolina, which we can get to that aspect of it later. But worst defeat in a legendary program's history. You're only in your second year. You had a great first year. Like maybe you're just at this point like ticked off and you don't know what else to do. And you're just trying to answer these media questions and get out of there.
Yeah, I always view press conferences, like whenever you hear something that has been that gets aggregated around social media, like Kim Caldwell's statements there, I always try and think, like, who are they talking to? Are they talking to the fans? Are they talking to the athletic director? Are they talking to the locker room? Coaches are very strategic in what they say. They know that they can utilize the media as a tool. We as media members understand that we can be kind of a soundboard for coaches. So I wondered who she was talking to there. And it's clearly the locker room. She is clearly sending a message to her locker room. And she says, we don't have any leaders. We need someone to step up. I'm sure her thought process is, I want everyone out here to understand that I'm calling you out. Like this is now you are under a microscope. You are under fire because at this point I can't do anymore. We'll put the pressure on you. The outside public will put the pressure on you. But I do wonder how much of that needed to be said publicly, because it's a very delicate balance. You have to know what your players need. And maybe Kim Caldwell knows that that's what her players need. But also what I would caution to her and to, you know, any coach is to make sure that things don't get mistranslated, that players don't feel called out to the point that they feel exposed, that they feel like their dirty laundry is being aired to the public. Sometimes there are things that are true. Like it is true that it felt like that Tennessee team quit. They got outscored 46-18 in the second half against South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like South Carolina shot 70% from the field. South Carolina is a fantastic team. They're not 70% from the field holding a team to 18 points in the second half. Good, especially not against Tennessee. So they did quit. Like that's not wrong. But how much of that needed to be said publicly and how much of that could have been an internal conversation? Again, Kim Caldwell might be at her wit's end here. Like this might be the last ditch effort where she's trying to get her team fired up. But as a coach, it's your responsibility to know that. It's your responsibility to know what gets your team motivated.
It's a great question. I wish it were a question we could answer. And I think it's always one of those things where, you know, maybe it comes out in the wash in a couple years and you find out if it was what motivated them or if it kind of continued to snowball. I mean, you said it, like they did look like they kind of quit. And yes, South Carolina rolled out the zone defense. Dawn Staley talked about how it was the most zone that she thinks she's ever played in a game or 26 years, but it was working. So you do it. Tennessee and Kim Caldwell's style is a style that requires buy-in from your entire team. And like, yes, that's true everywhere, right? You have to understand your role, what it is, what you're doing, et cetera. But this requires a team. And it also stood out to me that the very last question, I didn't quite catch who this person was asking about, but they asked about a certain player and how they were playing and what it meant, I think, to like play close to home or something. And she basically says, listen, I respect the question. I'm not trying to be rude here, but we have bigger problems as a team than what one player has done. And I think in terms of leadership, to your point about like calling a player out and making sure it's in the right way, she kind of talks about Mia Paldwell or Paldo and how she can be a leader. And I think she can. Like, that's a very bright spot for them. This is Kim Caldwell's first year really recruiting, bringing players into her system. But they're young. And I think to put a lot on a freshman like that is tough. Now, again, 4 years from now, maybe Mia Paldo says, oh, yeah, that's like what I needed. Like, I took it seriously. But maybe she doesn't. So I don't know that we're going to have an answer to what's going on at Tennessee right now.
Because sometimes teams need kicks in the butt. Like, I think mm-hmm. about the South Carolina-UConn game last year when South Carolina got absolutely drubbed by UConn. It was 87-58. And then South Carolina didn't lose a single game until the national championship game. But that was kind of the turning point in their season that they needed to be, you know, kind of hit with cold water in the face, a little bit of a wake-up call to turn their season around. Is that what this is for Tennessee? Or is Tennessee just a flawed team? Because I don't think Kim Caldwell is innocent in all of this. She mentions the leadership. She mentions the, you know, the want, the try, the effort. Sometimes you just need your players to do that. Like, I can't manufacture effort for you. But also, Kim Caldwell might be kind of telling on herself a little bit. Like, why aren't your players listening to your messaging? Why are your players quitting? You know, especially in college, when you're not talking about professionals that have multi-million dollar contracts, like, that falls on the adults in the room. And also, you know, like you mentioned, Kim Caldwell's, her style's different. It's a different sense. It's a different style of play. It's hockey on hardwood. It's really quick. They want to shoot the three. But at what point can you no longer be married to the system? Because so much of Tennessee's offense relies on three-point shooting. Well, against South Carolina, Tennessee was 10 of 44 from the three-point line. Tennessee is 215th in the country in three-point shooting percentage. They shoot sub 30% from three. So I know that this style is what Kim Caldwell has built her resume on. I know what this team is built around. But your job as a coach is also knowing when to adjust. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. And maybe this iteration, this Tennessee team, the way that it's built, just can't really fit that system.
Well, I think it's tough when you're going up against a South Carolina, right? To your point, South Carolina wanted them to shoot the three and they weren't shooting it well and they couldn't get it into the paint and they couldn't score in the paint and things spiral and the players give up. And one thing about that, though, is that we saw this last year where they would get down. But like if Tennessee was down 20 last year, you weren't changing the channel because they could shoot their way out of it or some quick steals. They haven't had the defensive pressure, I don't think, a lot of times either. You can get a quick inbound steal and buckets and you're back in the game. But the tough thing about Tennessee, I think, and like it's Kim Caldwell obviously wants the best out of her players and the best out of her program, right? Any coach would. But, like, it's South Carolina and it's UConn. And should you compete better in the second half than you have been? Should you keep playing till the end of the whistle as hard as you can? Yes, absolutely. But, like, they're just not that top tier. It's almost like we talked about with Duke at the beginning of the season. Like, the schedule was horrible. They did not play well against the very top teams, but it just kind of showed us that at least at that time, and for Tennessee right now, they're not one of the top teams. They're not a tier one. Like, they're tier 2 to 4, but they do need to figure that out before the bracket comes because you want to be a 4 seed and not a 5 seed.
Oh, 100%. Like, they want games at Food City Center or Food City Arena, whatever they call it these days. Thompson Bowling is what I consider it. But it's, you know, to your point, if we want to talk about panic time in Tennessee, and if you have any familiarity with the Tennessee fan base, they are passionate and they are vocal. And I have heard so many Tennessee fans, whether it be in person or online, you know, calling for Kim Caldwell to be fired, calling for them, you know, to blow everything up. And as a fan, you can feel however you want to feel. But at the end of the day, you look at Tennessee's schedule. They lost to NC State, a close loss in the first game of the season against a team that was top 10 in the country at the time, and NC State's a tournament team. They lost to UCLA, one of the best teams in the country. They lost to Louisville, a top 25 team in the country. Then they've most recently lost to South Carolina and UConn. You know, they have that loss to Mississippi State, an unranked team. But look, Mississippi State is unranked more so because they play in the SEC and they have an incredibly difficult schedule rather than they are just, a bad, terrible, trash team. Like, that's not – you're going to have some of those slip-ups and those losses whenever you're going through the grind of an SEC schedule. So is it panic time based off of results in Tennessee? I don't think so.
Panic time in terms of what, I think, is the question. They still have Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, and Vanderbilt. Like, haven't even been through the toughest part of the SEC schedule. I think it's panic time for this team because if your player or if your coach, and we've talked about this, I think, with the Aces too, like, if your coach is calling out your team in this way multiple times now, something is going on. And you need to fix that immediately because it does not get easier. Is it panic time for the program collectively to move on from Kim Caldwell? I don't think so. And I don't think that's fair to Kim Caldwell or Tennessee, especially with all the players, the young players they have and the players they have coming in. I'm just not that quick to move on.
Is it panic time based off of results that they've had? No. I don't think so. Losing three out of your last four, no, that doesn't feel great, but also understand that two of those three losses came at the hands of two legitimate national championship contenders that played the national championship game last year. Is it panic time based off of the rhetoric surrounding the program? I think that's fair. Surrounding the team. The program, no. Surrounding this team, yeah, I think it's fair. Whenever you hear a coach call a team out as explicitly as Kim Caldwell did, yeah, that's going to raise some red flags. All right, let's get into it. We do it every single week, Cass. Our player spotlight of the week. I will give you the floor. Who's your player this week?
Rory Harmon. I'm going to swing back around to honorable mentions because I know this one's like a high, low-hanging fruit, I guess. Rory Harmon in that rematch against LSU. The first game, she's benched for the fourth quarter. You talk about coaches calling players out. Vic Schaefer did not call her out, but said, as the point guard, she has to wear some of this. You know, we weren't our best today. And Rory sat the fourth quarter. In this game against LSU on the Texas home court, she sets the program steals record. She has six steals all over the place, five assists, only 11 points. But her tenacity on the defensive end is what really fuels this Texas team and why I think they're probably en route to the Final Four. Who you got for me?
I love that by you, by the way. Even if Rory Harmon doesn't have, like, you know, these paper-popping stats every single night, like, Rory Harmon feels like that motor that keeps Texas going. But I will go outside of my comfy confines of the SEC because I feel like I keep picking SEC players. And I'm like, okay, I have to hold myself accountable. Let's get out of our comfort zone here. I'm going Avery Howell from Washington. Washington had a massive overtime win over Wisconsin, and massive not in resume boosting, but massive in avoiding what could have been a borderline catastrophic loss. Like, we know the top of the Big Ten is incredibly competitive. Washington wants to be in that conversation. And when you lose to the Wisconsins of the conference, then we can start to poke holes in that argument. But no, Washington gets an overtime win over Wisconsin. Avery Howell has a 34-point day, 14 rebounds, two assists, a steal. She was the engine that kept that team running. She carried Washington largely in that game over Wisconsin. And what I think what made it even more impactful for me was in their previous game, a loss to Ohio State, Avery Howell only had 7 points in 34 minutes. And it could be easy for someone who's young. Avery Howell is a sophomore, new to Washington. It could be really easy to let some of those games and those performances really kind of hang over your head a little bit, make it be like a kind of a psychological aspect there. But good on Avery Howell for kind of, you know, washing that off, being a goldfish, forgetting about that performance and having a massive day. I mean, 34 and 14, huge for her.
Huge, huge for Washington. You know, the Big Ten is stacked with teams high in net rating. So that could really help them come March.
Yeah.
But I'm going to swing back around to some honorable mentions. Going to quickly hit them. Megan Anderson and Fairfield. She had 40 points in a record-setting 109-48 win over Marist. You're going to want to keep an eye on Fairfield as we reach into March. And then Vanderbilt on Monday night in that win over Oklahoma. Mikayla Blakes had 34 points. Aubrey Galvin, the freshman point guard, had 30. So they combined for 64 in a 102-86 win. Pretty wire to wire. I don't know if they scored the first points, but like they led throughout.
Dang. I mean, Mikayla Blakes is good for on any given night. Just guarantee Mikayla Blakes having some gaudy stat line. Vanderbilt has been and will continue to be, and I think will be in March, an absolute force to reckon with. We've got some games coming up. Let's transition into the unrivaled side of things. We've got the 1v1 tournament coming up. Any matchups that you're looking at? Maybe some early predictions for our 1v1 tourney?
Oh, man. Predictions? I don't know. I'm going to leave the matchup that you threw out to come back to you. But Dominique Malanga and Aaliyah Edwards. Aaliyah Edwards is the reigning runner-up in this competition. Obviously, Nafisa Collier is not competing. Alyssa Thomas and Aaliyah Boston, I feel like, could get a little messy. So keep an eye on that. Looking at that. The entire – right? I saw that. I was, like, scanning, and I saw that one. And I was like –
They know what they're doing.
Okay. It is my position this year. So we're not going to have like guard, big centers matching up. Looking at the entire bracket, though, Kelsey Mitchell and Kelsey Plum could meet in the quarterfinals. Paige could meet up with Chelsea Gray or Jackie Young. And dream teammates Alicia Gray and Ryan Howard are seated 1-2 in theirs. So I think it'll be an interesting look down the way.
No doubt. They've got a $300,000 cash prize on the line. And one matchup that stood out to me, Kate Martin versus Paige Beckers. That's just mean. That's not nice. That is, look, no disrespect to Kate Martin. I have all the respect in the world for Kate Martin. But come on. Come on. I mean, that is lopsided. Not very nice. But we have that to watch. Teammates. And just, you know, not nice in general. We'll be tuning into that. We've got some action on Wednesday on the college side of things. Washington and Iowa, UCLA, Michigan State. But it really starts to heat up on Thursday. We've got Texas at Vanderbilt. We've got TCU at Baylor. What stands out to you there, Cass?
I like the Big 12 matchup, TCU and Baylor. They're going to have two over the next couple of weeks. Baylor is leading the Big 12, but it's so topsy-turvy and odd and random. You've got four teams ranked in the AP poll between 12 and 19, which is pretty close. TCU has had a little trip up, so those are what I have my eye on.
Great point on the Big 12. It is such a funky and weird little conference, but I also love seeing all of these tests that Vanderbilt's been going through. At the beginning of conference play, maybe they didn't go through the same gauntlet as we've seen some other teams in the SEC, but they've had back-to-back top 25 ranked teams. They beat Kentucky. They beat Oklahoma. Texas is just the next test before they go through yet another gauntlet at the end of their season in Kentucky, Alabama, and Tennessee. So I love to see this Vanderbilt team kind of blossom and grow as they go through some more difficult matchups. But on Friday, Cass, the Ivy League is a women's basketball conference. Friday night, Columbia, Princeton. What are we watching for?
It's a rematch. Columbia gave Princeton their only league loss of the season. They have often had Princeton's number in the past few years, so I think this will be the fun one. And as you said, Ivy League has been showing up in a lot of brackets the past few years, so you're going to want to watch.
We have talked about Fairfield, Columbia, and Princeton. We even had a Case Western Reserve mention in our pre-show meeting. So yes. Don't say that we don't have some deep cuts here on this show, because we are a show of the people. But with that being said, we've got a match of the heavyweights on Saturday. South Carolina and LSU, always a great time when we get to see Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey go head-to-head. And the action on Sunday continues. Got some great rivalry games. UNC at Duke, 1 o'clock Eastern time. Huge game with some massive ACC implications. Texas and Tennessee, Maryland at Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Oklahoma, Alabama, West Virginia, TCU. Ooh, we've got a full day of action on Sunday.
Let's rewind for a second. I don't think either of us are betters, but what do you think Kim will be wearing on Saturday night? It's Valentine's Day. Don't forget.
Oh, okay. It's going to be like fuzzy and sparkly and pink and red with hearts on it. All of the above.
Okay.
If you can imagine it.
I'm going to get this out. I'm going to put check marks next to it and I will check. We'll see. I'll send you the text.
Okay. Wait, here's my official prediction. It's going to be a sweater that is some very bright color. I was going to about to use a different word, but I decided to be nice. Very bright color, like a bright pink or red. And it's going to have the little like candy hearts all over it with messages.
Oh, okay. Like be mine.
And sparkles. Yeah, like be mine.
Beat USC. Me.
Yeah. Kiss me. It's going to have a custom one that says Go Tigers all over it. G-E-A-U-X, Go Tigers all over it. It's going to be –
okay.
That's my official prediction. I don't know what the sports books have for those odds, but that's the kind of, you know, gambling advice that you can only get here on this show.
True.
But that is going to do it for us today. For Cassandra Negley, I am Caroline Fenton. Just a reminder that we are here for you. If there's anything that you want us to touch on, if you disagree with any of us, let us know. Leave us a comment down below if you're watching on YouTube. But of course, you can always find us on your preferred podcast platform as well. We'll catch you next week.